For Out Abogado, I'm Dan Fritz.
Hi, I'm Scott Elliott. I'm the director of Three Penny Opera. Come check it out and keep listening to WBAI New York.
Instead of staying home in bed at night behaving, they want love. They want love. Chasing up the alley with the sentimental craving.
Yeah, I love WBAI.
And we need a lot more of that, that's for sure. You're listening to WBAI in New York. The time is 7 o'clock. It's a Wednesday night, and that means you have no choice but to sit back and listen to Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour, talking about all kinds of technological issues and freedom of speech and computers and telephones and whatnot. With us tonight, over there is Jim.
Bonsoir.
And Mike.
Hi.
Arseny.
Hi.
Red Hacked.
Hello.
Walter.
Hey.
And Bernie S. down there in Philadelphia.
Greetings from Philadelphia. Red Bird is airborne right now.
How would you know that?
Because I met up with him here in Philadelphia before he got on his flight to L.A.
I taught him that trick, to go to Philadelphia to get the cheaper flights. Now he does it all the time.
He saved a lot of money thanks to you, Emmanuel.
All right. Well, at least now he's doing it on his own. Okay. We have an action-packed show tonight. First, a couple of announcements. The HOPE Conference draws ever closer, July 21st, 22nd, 23rd, with our trio of keynotes, Richard Stallman and Michael Hart. Angelo Biafra, along with Kevin Mitnick, Fiber Optic. Yeah, remember him? He's going to be there. And a whole bunch of other people working on the schedule for the last week nonstop. And we have something like 80 talks, all kinds of films we're going to be showing, all kinds of presentations, artwork, things like that. But pre-registration is closing. Pre-registration is closing soon. If Bernie, are you on a highway or something?
I actually am walking on the street, but I'll be in a quiet area in about 2 minutes.
All right. Well, we'll turn
I'll
down.
I'll keep my finger over the microphone.
Would you please? Thank you. Pre-registration closes for those of you overseas this Friday, June 30th. And for those of you not overseas, that is those of you in the U.S. or Canada, July 10th is the cutoff date. That's a Monday. And the cost will go up at the door. We don't like to mention prices on the air, but we will say it's going to be an extra $15. We're not mentioning a price by doing it that way. So
you could have mentioned a percentage.
Yeah, I didn't have time to figure that out.
It goes from what, 100% to 125% of the early price, doesn't it?
That's I guess that works. But here's the interesting thing. You know what? We're going to be taking euros in addition to dollars.
So those of you, what do we do with them?
Well, you see, lots of people come to this country and then they complain about getting ripped off at the banks when they do the exchange thing. This way, we're the ones who get ripped off at the banks. But we'll do it all in one big sum. So maybe we won't get ripped off quite as badly. We'll have to figure out, you know, how many euros equal how many dollars at registration and things like that. But it's just one way of making things easier for those of you coming from overseas.
Will you take Canadian dollars?
Let's not get crazy here.
It will definitely be under 1,000 euros. We know that much.
A lot easier for Canadians to get American dollars quickly than it is for Europeans with landing at the airport and, you know, coming up by a taxi or whatever. It can be frenzied.
What? Don't Canadians land at airports?
Not always. Well, it's getting too crazy now because then we're going to have to take Brazilian money and who knows what else. The euro is a nice big currency that many, many countries use, and that's why.
They're not that big.
You know what? No euros then. How about that? You see how these things go? You offer one thing. It's like offering the formats. You know, we offer MP3 and then people want Ogg Vorbis, and if you offer Ogg Vorbis, someone's going to complain about that and want something else, and it never ends. Never. Right, Mike?
Why don't we have Hog Forbes?
All right. Yeah, that's now your job.
Send your euros so we can afford to put the format in Hog Forbes.
And we're also going to take credit cards at the door. So,
but not give them back.
And Emmanuel.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to hear any of these jokes about hackers and credit cards because we have the most trustworthy people imaginable and the people who understand security better than anybody else. So you're a lot safer doing a credit card transaction with us than with a store, I'll tell you that right now. Yes, Bernie?
I was just going to say that if Jim mentions the percentage of price increase for on-site registration versus registering now online, our clever listeners could actually deduce with that number and the one you announced the actual ticket price.
You know, our clever listeners can deduce it by going to www.hope.net and find out everything right there.
Now, okay. See, I thought they were clever enough to deduce it without being told that they were clever enough to deduce it. So,
speaking of clever people who deduce things, we had a winner for last week's contest. Mike, you want to give us some details on this?
Yes, it's true. We had a winner very quickly, I think less than a day after we announced on the air.
I was flabbergasted.
You thought no one was ever going to get it.
No, you explained it to me, and I still didn't get it.
Yes. But now if people want to know how to get it, they can go on our on the website and click over to the blog, the Hope blog, and it will explain in great detail how to decode the message.
Well, I'd like for you to just give us a brief explanation, only because for the humor factor, because what we basically had was we had a phone number that you devised that was an imitation of the other phone numbers with the weird number messages.
Which, just for the record, I did not devise.
No, those ones had nothing to do with us, even though a listener accused us of doing it. And if we did, then no one's admitted it yet. I know I didn't do it. I'm really the only person I can speak for. But the one you devised started off the same way. It said, what was it again? Group 215?
Yeah, well, it played the clip of the song, and then it said group 215, group 215.
And then it read off a series of numbers in groups of five over and over again, well, twice each time, mm-hmm. until it got to the end. Now, okay, we can't figure out what the other ones mean. What did this one mean, and how were we able to get to it?
Well, this one said, "Mein Fraulein, for Hope tickets, please email," and it gave an email address.
That was the actual message to decode, not the message in the Craigslist ad that drew people's attention to the number.
Right. Well, I wouldn't give out the answer in the question.
Yeah, that wouldn't make any sense. Okay, so in order for people to get to that phrase, mm-hmm. they had to do something wacky to the numbers. Right.
Well, first, you had to take the groups of five and divide them up into groups of three instead.
And how would you know to do that?
Well, we've discussed it on the show.
Okay. And there are zeros pretty much separating almost all the numbers.
Yeah, except towards the end. And the thing you might notice is that the numbers, not sort of monotonically increasing, but they tended to get larger towards the end.
Yeah.
So you might notice that. And through some cleverness, you could find out that at the beginning, the first three-digit number, A is 0 and B is 1 and so on up to whatever it was for M, which was the first letter. And then the alphabet sort of increases by 2 and then by 1, but you skip the 5.
The clue we gave was lose the 5, right? So that was the group 215, you use the 2 and the 1, but you don't use the 5.
Yes, and I guess I can admit now on the air that this is due to a programming bug. I intended to use the 5.
Okay. But we just said lose the 5. Yeah. It's easier than just doing it all over again. Okay, so a number of people were discussing this. I know HomelandStupidity.us had a big discussion about it. And I guess you can probably hear the number over there as well if you really want to go through this yourself and figure it out. But congratulations to the person who did win. And keep looking for other Hope contests. Look for the flashing George W. Bush icon behind the Hope logo on the 2600.com webpage. That was a bit of fun. Something else that's fun, my postcard arrived. I sent myself a postcard from Cuba. Mm. It arrived 2 days ago. this got sent, the first week of May?
Something like that.
Yeah, and here it is, late June, and the thing finally arrived. As everybody else has remarked, there is no postmark on the stamp. The PostNet barcode was covered up by tape or something. I'm not quite sure why that is. I don't think other people had that happen.
Well, that was added by the United States.
I've seen that happen on all sorts of mail. I don't think that there's anything to be inferred by the tape or lack of markings on it.
Usually they print a new barcode on the tape.
All right, forget about the tape, but how about no postmark on the stamp?
That is odd.
And every single postcard from Cuba has no postmark on the stamp.
Really? Yeah. That is definitely odd. We've now established that.
Now, I'm trying to figure out how the mail actually gets here from there, because obviously it's not done through conventional means, and I don't think we're able to just simply trade mail, because then we'd be doing business with them and we're not allowed to do that. So I think it's going in somebody's bag or something, and when they get around to it, they just drop it off in the States. Because 2 months, almost 2 months for it to get 80 miles to the States?
I don't know about that. I mean, if it was a Cuban diplomat to the UN mailing it, it would be kind of odd to accept mail with a Cuban stamp somewhere in New York around the UN. I'm thinking it's some secret agreement, probably with the Canadians, whereby it goes by diplomatic pouch to Canada, it's handed over to somebody in Canada, it goes by some sort of, maybe not diplomatic pouch, but some sort of not quite mail channels to the U.S. mail.
Well, I mean, they could just mail it all to Canada and have somebody, but then it would get stamped somewhere.
Right, you'd have Canadian stamps. You'd need Canadian stamps.
Yeah, what's that?
It's all very mysterious.
It is mysterious. If anybody can shed some light on this, please email us, oth@2600.com. We'd sure love to know.
If you are in the Canadian post office or have relatives who are, inquire there, because that's where we think it's most suspicious.
Well, that's what you think.
Okay.
I mean, I don't necessarily think.
If someone else here comes up with an alternative theory, we
could
can
be Mexico,
appeal.
Could be the Bahamas.
Caribbean, yeah, it could be anywhere.
Well, I like Canada.
Could be Europe.
Perhaps if it comes straight to the United States, there's no postmarks because the U.S. refuses to acknowledge their existence.
Oh, maybe something like that. Well, you know, if you're in a post office in Miami or something like that, and you get mail from Cuba and you're told not to do anything to it.
I have read that it takes a whole month for mail to get from Cuba to Santiago, which is the second largest, from Havana to Santiago, which is the second largest city. So maybe the Cuban postal administration is just incompetent.
Can we send mail to Cuba?
I imagine so.
I don't know.
Who are we going to send mail to? Bernie, we can send mail to your friend. Bernie? Bernie's in shock.
But I think Bernie has sent mail to Radio Havana.
He said he'd be in a quiet place. I just didn't know it was going to be this quiet. Okay, well, maybe Bernie just has drifted away for a second. We'll check back with him in a minute. If he's still not there, we'll have to call him again. Here's an interesting story. A hacker broke into the Agriculture Department's computer system and may have obtained names, Social Security numbers, and photos of 26,000 Washington area employees and contractors. That's according to the Agriculture Department, who said this last week. Agriculture Secretary Mike Johans said the department will provide free credit monitoring for 1 year for anyone who might have been affected. It's that same scam where they basically say, hey, you can have this for a year, and if you don't tell us anything, we're just going to sign you up for it afterwards. It's amazing how that works almost anywhere. The break-in happened during the first weekend in June. The technology staff learned of the breach on June 5th and informed them the following day, but believe personal information was protected by security software. Again, it's all very vague and nebulous. But people who believe they may be affected by the data breach can go to www.firstgov.gov. Yeah, that's right, firstgov.gov. For more information, the Agriculture Department has a toll-free number to call for information about the incident or about consumer identity protections. The number 1-800-FED-INFO is a call center that operates from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Let's give them a call. Yes, go ahead.
I had a quick question.
That's Bernie. He's gone.
When people are actually victims of identity theft with their Social Security number and all that, is the Social Security Administration dishing out new numbers all the time?
That's a good question.
How does that work?
It's very difficult to get a new number through Social Security. Usually you have to say that the number is 666 is on my Social Security number. I want a different number. Otherwise, it's very difficult. They don't do it unless you can, for cases of identity theft or identity commingling, unless you can show that it's really serious.
Okay, let's get a dial tone here and give a call to the Fed info number. Don't know if there's going to be a person here or a machine or what.
Welcome to 1-800-FED-INFO. If you are calling about the recent theft of Veterans Affairs electronic data, we believe this theft was a random act and not a deliberate attempt to steal information about veterans. The VA is actively investigating, but there is no reason to believe any veteran's information will be misused. We do not have information about individual records that may have been stolen, but will provide updates as information becomes available on www.firstgov.gov.
Said that already.
That's firstgov.gov.
Yeah.
If you would still like to speak to an agent about this incident, please press 0 now. If you are calling regarding the possible USDA personal information breach or have other government questions, please stay on the line for additional options.
Oh, additional options.
To continue in English, please press 1.
Para continuar en español, presione el 2.
Thank you for calling 1-800-FEDINFO, the gateway to information about the federal government.
Oh, boy.
If you have internet access, we invite you to visit www.firstgov.gov. If your call is in regards to the possible USDA personal information breach, you may press 0 now. Your call may be monitored or recorded for training and quality assurance purposes.
Okay.
For passport or visa information, please press 1.
Oh, they mean business
for
now.
For general information on government funding, such as grants, please press 2. For information on federal jobs, please press 3.
She's intimidating, isn't she?
For information about Social Security, please press 4.
Ooh.
If you have a document that needs to be authenticated, please press 5. For information about Medicare, Medicaid, birth certificates, taxes, veterans benefits, identity theft, or work-related issues.
How does identity theft tie into all that?
For all other questions, please press 0 to speak with a customer service representative.
Ah, but what happens if you press star?
I'm sorry, our system did not recognize your choice. Please re-enter your selection.
Yeah, that's a story of my life. Okay, that's those are the folks at FedInfo there.
Wait, so there's 2 thefts of personal data that they're telling you about.
Were there 2 or did they just repeat themselves?
No, there's the Veterans Affairs and the USDA.
And I'll bet those people are getting an offer of a year of credit monitoring.
They gave the veterans, the 26 million veterans whose information was on a laptop after somebody illegally took the information home to work on it at home. They gave each of them, after much to do, a year's worth of credit protection, which, as you say, will become an offer to pay for it afterwards.
Why is it always 26? 26 million, 26,000?
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Subtle way of getting us. But we're not gonna react to it, all right? We're not gonna react. We're not gonna be goaded into anything like that.
Well, why aren't these organizations liable for loss of any of this information? What kind of recourse does a person have if their identity
it's
has
the
been
feds.
Stolen and used?
They have sovereignty.
Well, even like private companies, do you have any kind of way to deal with that?
Bernie is back, I believe. Do you have an answer for this, Bernie?
Well, unfortunately, if you peel back the skins on the onion around the federal government, you'll find that they have virtual immunity to this, to lawsuits for this kind of stuff. And I would say that they lied on that message that you just got through that voice response system. And they said no information about it, about the data that was lost. Clearly, they have information about the data that was lost.
Of
they
course.
Just lied.
Yeah, I mean, how would they know that data was lost if they didn't have information on it?
Exactly.
And they say, well, we don't believe that's going to be used in a bad way. How do you know that, too? How do you know how it's going to be used? I think they just they messed up somehow, and something got lost. And that's
they're just trying to mollify people right now.
Yeah, mollify people. Okay, now we have a very interesting story that you may have heard about in the mass media, because it involves the mass media, actually. And that is the New York Times story, which came out on June 22nd, begins this way. Under a secret Bush administration program, we're going to have to start coming up with letters and numbers for all the secret Bush administration programs there are. This was initiated weeks after 9/11. Counterterrorism officials have gained access to financial records from a vast international database and examined banking transactions involving thousands of Americans and others in the United States. That's according to government and industry officials. Now, that's how the story started, and it went on for quite a bit, and it has provoked the most vicious attacks that I have seen in a long time against the media in general. And it's kind of frightening. It's kind of frightening. I saw Bush speaking against this, calling it disgraceful. I think they're using the word disgraceful. Everyone is calling it disgraceful.
You need to clarify. Bush would not do anything so useful as call the program itself a disgrace.
Oh, no, no, no. Well, it's his program. I don't think he's that inept. But the fact that the time – I saw this on CNN last week when the story broke that there are radio talk show hosts all over the country who are outraged not at Bush. They're outraged at the New York Times for putting us at jeopardy by revealing this information. And you have jokers like Representative Peter King. I talked about him on my other show yesterday, actually calling for journalists to be shot for treason. This he said about a year ago. But this is the mentality that's starting to take over, where people are successfully getting the public to believe that revealing this information on things that are very likely completely 100% illegal, somehow that is wrong to reveal it. There is talk about how the media was disgraceful in revealing the fact that the administration leaked a CIA person's name. Not the fact that the administration leaked the name, the fact that the media reported that the administration leaked the name. That was disgraceful. It's simply amazing to me that they're going down this road, but it's scary. It's scary for all of us who have any interest in journalism, media, what have you. And I think everyone needs to take a good look at this, see how the New York Times is being attacked for this. It's frightening.
If I recall correctly from that article, the database is called, I believe, SWIFT.
Yes.
And it's in Belgium.
Is it in Belgium?
Somewhere around there.
Belgium. A Belgian cooperative that routes about $6 trillion daily between banks, brokerages, stock exchanges.
You may remember the classic Sunday morning service I gave at the Second Hope under my previous nom de guerre, Red Balaclava, about the mark of the beast and the apocalypse and how the New World Order would be monitoring you.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Well, okay. But the point is this. Doing what little research I did for that, I was laughing all the way through the New York Times story. Any apocalyptic account from the time that SWIFT was set up in the late 60s blames SWIFT as the beast. It is the thing that measures everything about everybody. It knows your bank records, okay? And Bush is going on about how this was a secret and no one knew about it. I'm reading the Times article, and this is 20-year-old news to me. 20 years old. I'm laughing hysterically while I'm reading it because of this. And I just simply cannot believe it.
U.S. Senator Jim Bunning accused the New York Times of treason yesterday, suggested the federal government consider bringing criminal charges against the newspaper for revealing the government program that secretly tracks the financial transactions of suspected terrorists and a whole lot of Americans, too. Bunning said the newspaper's revelation of the program in a story published last week amounted to giving aid and comfort to the enemy. It is an act of treason. I think it is up to the attorney general to impanel a grand jury and bring those people before the grand jury. And if the grand jury feels like that is a violation, they should indict them. And U.S. Representative Peter King, Republican right here in New York, and chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, said he intends to write Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and ask that the Times be investigated and prosecuted for publishing the story. That is, as soon as he learns how to write. All right.
Daniel?
Yes, Bernie.
This is really not much different what the U.S. government is doing in Belgium with that database, as they have been doing for years here in the U.S. with a branch of the government called FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Board, which is based in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. It's a very large government intelligence organization that takes data from all U.S. banks and analyzes any kind of funds transfers. And they've been doing this. That was started under the excuse that it was to help fight the war on drugs, but they haven't gone away, and FinCEN is still alive and well and has had increased funding since 9/11. But you don't hear much about it. But what it sounds like what they're doing with the SWIFT database in Belgium is not unlike what the U.S. government has been doing to us here at home with FinCEN.
The thing that really worries me about this whole thing, the way it's playing out, what if it was not the New York Times that revealed this? What if it was something much, much smaller, like Cryptome or even Off the Hook, revealing the existence of a program like this, a secret program? I don't think we'd have the means of defending ourselves quite like something as big as the Times or the Washington Post or the LA Times can do. So eventually something like this is going to happen, where a journalist is successfully accused of treason simply for reporting news. I mean, does anybody think this is something that should not have been reported?
Well, it's noteworthy that the New York Times actually knew about this for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
and really took the time to deliberate amongst themselves with editors and so forth as to whether this truly damaged national security to release this information. And they thought long and hard about it. This isn't like President Bush earlier this week lit into the Times specifically for releasing this information, which was leaked by a government agent anyway, obviously. This was something that the press deeply considered as to whether this was newsworthy and in the public interest. And I think it is in the public interest.
Well, again, if the news is out there, if people are talking about this, then I don't think you have to think very long. Is this going to hurt the national interest? Because it's already out there. It's already out. They're reporting news. They're reporting something that is being disseminated. So obviously that's not even a concern. But what is being used here in this case is the fact that traditionally the media has agreed to demands from the government in times of war. Except now we're in a state of perpetual war. This war is never going to end. So we have to always listen to what we are told and not reveal information that may not seem like it threatens national security, but because we're told it does, and we can't be told why, because knowing why would also hurt national security, we must just simply do what we're told by the government. What does that sound like? That doesn't sound like the country that I was born into.
One thing that's interesting here is that since SWIFT is a Belgian entity, they are subject, of course, to Belgian law, including Belgian privacy protections. So there may actually be some consequences for them, unlike a lot of the U.S. companies who've been implicated in these sorts of things, and at least so far have got away with it.
It's also it's fascinating for me to hear these politicians claiming the New York Times has a far left agenda. I mean, you know, I don't know where that puts me because I think they're rightist, to be honest, compared to most of the people I talk to. But whether or not you think they're to the right or to the left, I think this is a time to speak up in their defense because this kind of thing, if they are successfully prosecuted for this, or if this kind of thing is stopped in the future and the next story that comes along isn't printed, we all lose. We all lose, regardless of what you think of where the New York Times stands. That's just something I think is very important. And when you have idiots like Peter King going around suggesting that that journalists be shot for printing stories, that just that changes everything. That changes the whole face of the landscape because it gets people thinking along those lines. It really does. Like, yeah, these people are enemies. They're enemy combatants. Send them to Guantanamo. Do whatever you have to do to them. It's, you know, it's worth it to protect our national interests.
Hey, at least we can still burn the flag.
yeah, but because of what? One vote?
Yeah, well.
Unbelievable.
Well, it's clearly an intimidation tactic. I think they're taking a different tack with this leak, and they're really trying to intimidate the New York Times and other papers and anyone else who might want to put information out.
And it's going to succeed. It's going to succeed. A lot of newspapers that are not the New York Times will not print this kind of information.
Yeah, and you know there are dozens of other programs which have not been revealed yet.
And if anybody reveals them to us, we will tell. We'll talk about them on the air. We will risk whatever penalties are thrown our way or condemnation. Now, Mike, you had something from the New York Post of all places.
Yeah, I was just walking by the New York Post.
Yeah, sure. You pick
style.
It up every day. Why don't you just confess? Okay. You and Jim are the two New York Post readers in the room. We all know that.
But we do it for the gossip.
All right.
And on the cover of the New York Post, it said New York Crimes, like with the in the New York Times font. But
they
the
use
CR.
Their font? That could be illegal right there.
Anything could be illegal.
Yeah, because that's their font. They can't use their font.
So my theory is that the Post is really just jealous that the Times got the story first. But
yeah, like the New York Post would print anything against the Bush regime.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, hopefully.
I think they're certainly happy to, like, do anything that makes the New York Times, in their opinion, look bad. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, pure competition more than anything else.
Okay. Another story here. AT&T has issued an updated privacy policy that took effect last Friday. The changes are significant because they appear to give the telecom giant more latitude when it comes to sharing customers' personal data with government officials. The new policy says that AT&T, not customers, owns customers' confidential information and can use it to protect its legitimate business interests, safeguard others, or respond to legal process. The policy also indicates that AT&T will track the viewing habits of customers of its new video service, something that cable and satellite providers are prohibited from doing. Moreover, AT&T and the SBC that it swallowed up is requiring customers to agree to its updated privacy policy as a condition for service, a new move that legal experts say will reduce customers' recourse for any future data sharing with government authorities or others. It's pretty incredible. Are there any AT&T users here for cell phone service?
Yeah. Although it's part of Singular now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So, but Singular might be owned by one of them. It's really confusing.
Uh-huh. Well, Bernie, this is
where the common argument by a lot of these free market types, where if you don't like it, just go to another carrier, falls down, because there is no competition in a lot of markets. And people have to agree to this because they don't have, you know, all these options to just go somewhere else.
Bernie, how does this compare to Sprint PCS, who you're still tied to?
I haven't received a notice yet from Sprint PCS in my bill, like AT&T will apparently be notifying its customers, if it hasn't already, about this. But you can bet that they're going to follow suit. And as Mike just said, you're not going to have a market choice when it comes to privacy in the near future. So, you know, I agree with him that you can't just say, well, if you don't like it, just choose another company, because there's just going to be a handful of these big companies, and they're not going to, none of them are going to deny the government what they ask for, and none of us will have a choice as to which carriers to use for privacy.
But, you know, none of them would have denied the government access in the past. The only difference is that the government had to go through channels to do it. Listen to what the policy says now. While your account information may be personal to you, these records constitute business records that are owned by AT&T. As such, AT&T may disclose such records to protect its legitimate business interests, safeguard others, or respond to legal process. Now, it says the company may disclose your information in response to subpoenas, court orders, or other legal process, omitting the earlier language about such processes being required and or permitted by law. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of significant there, don't you think?
Well, right now it looks like it goes beyond due process. And simply now the agreement looks like the contract, which... When you sign a contract with a company, you think a contract is an agreement between two parties. And these contracts with these companies that you sign are very one-sided. And they say, we can change our side of the contract anytime we feel like. So, you know, I agree with you. It's just you have no protection against this.
Okay. Time for some listener mail. We'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit. Our email address, oth@2600.com. We love to hear from you. You're off the hook. My company issues eTrack credit cards to use pre-tax salary for Metro cards and commuter railroad tickets. In January, the MTA installed an address verification system in its ticket vending machines. I think we've all come across these. It prompts you for your home zip code after you swipe your credit card. If you enter the wrong zip code, the transaction is denied, and you're given the unhelpful message, cannot process your request, and the prompt to try again or cancel. I guess you can stay there forever and just keep going until you get the zip code right. Anyway, today I tried four times to get a Metro card and entered my correct zip code, but because of some problem with the machine, it kept aborting the transaction. After the fourth try, my account was locked out for 3 business days. Interesting. The funny part, which I learned later from the credit card company, was that the MTA charged me for each try. It debited my account by the amounts I had entered for a total of $160. The credit card company assures me the money will be refunded. A person there said that in January they were getting 25 calls a day about this. By now, the number has dwindled to 3 a day. Some problems cited other than user error were the machine timing out before the user had a chance to press the enter key, which is the pound sign on the keypad, the switching of the enter and cancel, which is a star key, and the illegibility of the label on the enter key. The address verification system is supposed to prevent credit card fraud and protect customers from having their money stolen. But if the procedure by design debits the account before the verification step, where is the logic? It only means the MTA might benefit from the theft rather than the person who stole your card. Signed, Tim. Tim, this is shocking. There's no other word for it. You ever hear of anything like this, Jim?
It is not shocking.
The MTA does this kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. I've worked for them for 20-some-odd years. Of course, it's not shocking.
Knowingly, they go out and they...
I'm curious as to, with this card provided by your company from a third party, which zip code were you supposed to enter? Your home zip code? Your office zip code? The head office of the company you work for zip code?
It's supposed to
or
be...
Or the credit card's company's zip code?
No, it's supposed to be the zip code that your bill goes to from that credit card. That's what it is.
But apparently the bill goes to the company.
Yeah, that's why he got it wrong, probably, because he didn't know that zip code. He was entering his zip code. I don't know. Or well, maybe the machine was just broken.
That's possible. It's bad software design on the part of the MTA, which is nothing new. We've known about that.
It's incredibly bad because the whole purpose of it is to see if you're the right person. If it charges you before it verifies that step, what's the point of it in the first place?
It could just be broken. Yeah. This may not be the design.
Yeah, well, you know, there was one thing. I know some Shell gas stations had this where you would pump the gas. And then instead of, when they ask you if you want a receipt, it asked yes or no. If you hit the cancel key instead, it canceled the whole transaction and you got the gas for free. We reported that in 2600 a couple of years ago, and boy, did that cause a fuss.
I think I've had times where I've entered the zip code wrong and I haven't been charged multiple times.
Are you sure?
Yes.
We should go to a subway station after the show. And let's get you a $500 Metro card.
They don't
get the
allow
zip code.
That.
Whatever they allow.
I don't need it.
It doesn't matter what you need. you need the education, and it will enter the wrong zip code, and that'll be that. You have nothing to lose, right? You look a little doubtful now.
I don't need a $500.
But you're not going to get one because you're going to enter the zip code wrong. So you're not going to get one, right?
Sure.
Okay.
The trepidation on his face, viewers.
It has to be an amount that he'll
$80.
He'll have to comment on.
At least they have that the verification now, because I did have my credit card stolen once, and they charged my account a couple of unlimited Metro cards right before I left for Europe. It was great experience.
Okay, this reader, or listener actually, could be a reader too, writes, I accidentally left my BlackBerry turned on while flying recently. Actually, he put the word accidentally in quotes. So now I suspect it wasn't accidental at all.
Don't read his real name then.
Oh, it's Dr. Noah Little Peep again.
Who?
I don't think that's his real name. It's from Canada. It's written to us a couple of times. It kept the network signal for a surprisingly long time, and I was able to send and receive email for about two-thirds of the climb to cruising altitude, but I couldn't get a signal after that. The signal returned soon after we started descent. Bernie, does this make sense to you?
Yes, I wonder how close to the window he was holding his BlackBerry. But it is intriguing that that these low-power handsets or BlackBerries can get a signal, several miles airborne to a cell site. My concern is how many other cell sites he was hitting simultaneously, and what confusion that was causing to the network.
Well, obviously, it wasn't affecting his connection because he was able to proceed normally.
Mm-hmm. But it probably caused some consternation at the network switching level, because it was receiving his signal equidistant from probably multiple cell sites at the same time, which is never going to happen when you're on the ground. These networks are designed for your radio or BlackBerry or phone to be at ground level. But once you get it way up in the air, you're going to blanket a whole city's worth of cell sites simultaneously with your signal, unlike the cellular model where you're going to be only within one cell on the ground. So he probably caused some network havoc on the ground without knowing it.
Right. Well, here's the thing, though. When he got all the way up to cruising altitude, how come he lost signal there?
It probably just, the power decreases as it's called the inverse square law. As you get farther away from something, the power received at the other end decreases exponentially. So he probably just got too far away from the receiver to transmit the signal, or he got too far away from the transmitter base station to receive the signal. One way or the other, he was too far away.
You're shaking your head, Mike. You disagree?
It's quadratically, not exponentially.
Oh, okay, yeah. You're right.
All right. Thanks for cutting in with that correction there. Interesting. So I guess if your plane is in distress, you won't be able to phone back to the ground if you're 40,000 feet up in the air. You'll have to use the pay service that they have on the plane itself.
Yeah, I don't think the 9/11, so-called 9/11 cell phone callers were at that high an altitude when they were supposedly making successful cell phone calls to their loved ones
right. In
their final hours. So
that's if you believe that story, and they didn't all land someplace and wind up on another planet.
Oh, on the Cuban email, Emmanuel.
Yes.
Our Cuban postcards and mail, so forth. I do have experience with that, as Mike pointed out. I have gotten QSL cards from Radio Havana, Cuba, which are just really nice postcards with a nice scene from Cuba with a friendly thank you message on the back confirming that I had received this signal of Radio Havana, Cuba on 6,000 kilohertz or 6 megahertz. And I have gotten responses from them much more quickly than you got your postcards to the U.S., which makes me wonder if their official government mail from Radio Havana, Cuba is handled differently than consumer or civilian mail.
Definitely.
If you send a request by U.S. mail to Radio Havana, mm-hmm. You'll get your QSL card back in about a month. But if you send your QSL request or confirmation that you received their signal via email at rhc.cu, you can get a postcard back in about 2 weeks, which is, at least three times faster than you got yours.
Well, that's true, but it's only one direction the mail has to go, too.
Well, I'm talking about email. If you email Radio Havana
right. Via
rhc.cu...
You're not sending them a letter, so it takes a lot quicker.
Right. So it looks like it's... But you sent your postcard from Cuba to here, correct?
Right.
And it took, what, 6 weeks, you said?
Six, 7 weeks, yeah.
Okay.
But so there were a batch that showed up 2 weeks ago, too. A lot of them showed up, and then the next batch is now.
I think what he's saying is in both cases, the mail only had to go one way, and yes. With emailing Radio Havana, it took 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
With you sending it from Cuba, it took 6-7 weeks.
Well, wait. I thought he said that if you sent them a piece of mail in the U.S. mail, it took 4 weeks from that point. U.S. mail has to get there, too, and that takes a long time.
We're just looking at the time difference between getting from Cuba to here.
Yeah, but you don't know when the card you sent to Cuba arrived in Cuba, do you?
No.
I said we do it by email. If you do it by email, they get that information right away. There's no delay with them getting that.
I know. I understand. That's the point I'm making, is that you cut out the time.
I think we are all in agreement, and yet we're arguing
anyway. You cut out the time
anyway. Where
you sent the mail from the U.S. to Cuba. What's so hard to understand?
I think the point he's trying to make is when he emails them,
mm-hmm.
they, in Cuba,
right. Send
him a postcard.
Obviously.
You were in Cuba, and you sent yourself a postcard. Thus, it took 2 weeks for them and 7 weeks for
you. We were comparing the two means of getting a QSL card, not me sending a postcard. We all know that takes an amazingly long time.
All right, we all understand.
I think so.
Maybe
anyway. The
Radio Havana Cuba doesn't use the rip-off expensive peso stamps. They use the other peso.
Well, whatever they use, it takes a real long time. They don't postmark it, so... You know, people will say, you just dropped this in my mailbox. You weren't actually in Cuba. They're going to say that because there's no proof here. There's no proof I'm actually... Oh, wait, there is a number down there. Do you see that number? Yeah, why don't you look that number over and tell me what that means.
Was there a postmark on any of your postcards, Bernie?
The number is your
really
zip code.
Remember.
It was put there by the United States Postal Service.
Say it again, Mike?
The number in the lower left is your zip code. It was put there by the U.S. Postal Service.
Why would they need to do that when my zip code was written nicely? Well, of course, they covered it with tape, too. I don't know what these people are doing. Okay, here's some more interesting mail from listeners. And our phone number 212-209-2900. We'll be taking phone calls in about 5 minutes or so. You're off the hook. I don't know if you know this already, but maybe you could mention it. It applies for you to UK listeners. The ID Cards Act was introduced earlier this year. If you renew your passport as soon as possible, it means you don't have to have an ID card until 2016. That's right. So if you renew it... soon after they start doing this, I guess you'll wind up with one. So you'll have a 10-year extension on your privacy. It's sad that we have to think that way, but that's how it is right now. P.S. I'm still awaiting a T-shirt and mouse mat from a donation I made while you were on the air a few weeks ago. Signed, John from Newcastle upon Tyne. Well, sorry about the delay. I understand that the wheels are moving now. The problem was with communication. The stuff, you should have gotten it in May, actually. It's been ready to be mailed. And we've just been trying to get verification that the people actually paid the pledges, and that's the only thing we've been waiting for. Everything has been packaged up and ready to go. Those of you who I know pledged for Hope tickets, you're obviously concerned about that as the conference gets closer, you should have it by next Wednesday, by the show next Wednesday. If you do not, email us, let us know. That doesn't mean email us on Monday and tell us you don't have it. Email us on Wednesday, because that's how long I think it might take for you to actually get them. Well, there's people mailing now. No, don't mail now. Mail next Wednesday if you don't have your tickets and you pledge for them for Off the Hook. Simple, right? Okay.
I'm confused.
Yeah. I'm right where we belong. Let's see what else here. Oh, yeah. I've just heard your latest podcast and thought you might be interested to know that here in Ireland and the UK, Ireland especially, the word arse is a very common term for, buttocks, bum, ass, rear, whatever you want to call it. I know that you Americans also call it fanny, but that means something else over here as well. It's just really funny to email an arse, signed Stephen. Well, arseny here. People were emailing you, I believe, for film information about the Hope Conference. Is that right? Should they feel embarrassed about that? It's not one big joke?
No. Actually, I usually respond to the people that emailed me, so they know that it's real.
Arse?
Sometimes.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, that's a real name
in
Russia.
My full name is Arseny, and I like to have a nickname of Arse, and if it's offensive to you, well, sorry.
Well, I mean, in Russia, lots of people have this name, right?
Well, not that many people, but
a fair amount.
More than here, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't suppose they have like John over there means ass or something. I mean, do they have? Does it work the other way at all?
I don't know. I
how do you say ass in Russian? Just for the education of the listeners.
Well, will we get in trouble from the FCC?
Not if it means the same thing that ass means
okay.
here.
It's a zhopa.
Okay. I don't know anybody named that. But that's a good name. Okay. There you go. Who says we don't cover everything here? Dear Off the Hook, I think you guys are off base with the net neutrality issue. The government needs to stay out of it. What I would like is a bill to disallow any government regulation of the internet. You invite the government into your industry and it will exert more and more control as time goes on. It's amazing to me how this issue turned into the government getting involved when in actuality we're trying to prevent big business from taking over. And the only way to prevent big business from taking over, we can't stop them. We can't stand in front of their doors and keep them from ruining the internet and making it into a big pay service where only the rich people will be able to get their mail delivered in a timely fashion. No, we have to get bills and legislation passed. It's the only way to do it. And yet, I guess that means government gets involved, but it's only because of the misbehavior of the big corporations. Is that clear enough?
Yeah. It's like, you know, with...
But you agree with me?
Yeah. Hard to believe. It's like laws against murder and stuff. I mean, you know, the government is involved. Yeah, I don't want the government poking around my life, but if somebody takes a pot shot at me, you know, I want him punished.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have to go after him myself. What if he's got bigger guns than me?
Yeah, you mentioned guns. Guns is another example. When people say, I don't want the government taking my guns away. No, it's not the government doing it. It's the other people around you that want you to get rid of
them. I don't want
them
taking my guns away.
Well, they're the people. They're the people that don't want you to be shooting around the neighborhood.
But I don't want you having a gun, you in particular.
Well, it's okay. I'm a convicted
felon. I don't want you,
Mike,
having a gun. I don't want anybody in this room having a gun.
Well,
there should be no guns in the studio.
My mind
this is not Hot 97, you know.
That sounds fair.
All right.
My mind is my weapon.
Okay, shall we take some phone calls? 212-209-2900. Yes, Walter.
I'm pretty sure the power falls off quite quadratically, not as one with R the fourth power, because otherwise energy is not conserved.
I said quadratically.
You said quadratically.
One over R squared for gravity.
Rewind the tape.
Electromagnetic.
Did Bernie say that?
Yeah, he did say quadratically.
Yeah, it was Bernie. Hey,
technically, exponentially is correct.
Bernie made
there is an exponent involved.
The exponent is two.
Exponentially is not right. Though the fields go as 1 over R squared.
Walter, you're giving a talk, I believe, at the Hope Conference.
Yes, I'll go over all of this.
What is your subject, just to give people the...
I'm going to be talking about quantum cryptography and quantum computation. I know something about physics. So,
being a physicist, I would imagine you do.
Yes.
Good. Okay, well, that's just one of many many talks. The schedule will be posted in the next day or so on the website, www.hope.net. So if you're considering going based on the schedule, keep looking at that, and I think you'll be convinced that this is going to be really amazing. A lot of panels on phone freaking, computer hacking, cryptography, all sorts of subject matter. Anything.
Cooking.
Even hacker cooking, if you can believe that. It's simply amazing. Bernie, I think there's something on ham radio too, right?
Not just ham radio, but all means of radio communications that you can use to get yourself out of a jam if hits the fan and all the lines go down, or if you just don't want to use a communications medium that corporations are going to hand over to Big Brother's data mining project, there are alternatives. So that's another thing worth listening to at the 6th Hope Conference.
Hope number 6, yeah. And the Prometheus Radio Project is also going to be on hand, and they've certainly been very active in past Hope Conferences, and they always draw a great crowd themselves.
How to start your own low-power FM station in the United States. It is legal, and they will tell you how to do it.
Okay. Hope Conference, July 21st, 22nd, 23rd, right here in New York City, Hotel Pennsylvania, www.hope.net. And before we take phone calls, our address, if you want to write to us, oth@2600.com. Okay, Redbird's not here, so who's going to be Redbird this week? Me? No, I already have enough lines to read.
Why don't you just say his lines?
Arseny, you've just hired yourself.
What am
to
I
do
supposed
it.
To say?
Oh, you'll see.
Yeah, you'll see. When we look at you in point, that's when we need you to do something. Okay, our address, our mailing address, and not enough people send us stuff, so we'd like to see more stuff in the Off the Hook mailbox. It's Off the Hook, care of WBAI. Does that make
sense? It's still you.
It's been so long. 120 Wall Street.
10th floor.
New York?
New York.
10005.
You know, we're gonna have to start writing this down because it's just gotten too confusing. Good evening.
You
You're
wonder
on
why
the air.
We don't get mail.
Oh, that person left. Good evening. You're on the air. Anybody there?
Yeah, the curious whether you're familiar with this conference that's actually running today and tomorrow called the C3 Expo.
No, tell us about it.
And they've got some program called Second Generation RFID.
Okay.
It looks pretty curious. If you poke around, you find it. They do want a fee to go, but you can get a code and get a free pass. It looks fairly interesting. Unfortunately,
where is this located?
At Javits.
Okay. Red Hat, you look perplexed.
I was wondering where it was.
That's okay. Second generation RFID. So what exactly does that mean? Does anybody know?
The conference is called C3Expo.
Mm-hmm. .com. Okay.
I would imagine, Emmanuel, that it's an RFID that uses the newer, longer range 13.56 megahertz frequency as opposed to the old frequency, which I think was really low, like 125 kilohertz or something. It had to be just centimeters away from the sensor to be picked up. The newer frequency is much higher and provides longer range on the order of maybe even yards or longer if you have really good antennas. So it makes for more efficient RFID tracking of RFID tags, which is good and bad.
Yeah, the site's a little confusing about how they're treating it. Some of the little explanations of the conference sessions seem to be attacking it, calling it kind of degenerative or calling it anti-competitive or something, and whereas other ones seem to be celebrating it.
Okay, well, thanks for the info. Maybe we'll send somebody down to check into this. So always something interesting going on. And we're certainly going to have a lot of RFID talks at the conference. That's a big topic. Okay, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on. You know, it's my fault. I'm hitting these lines and they move. They don't stay in the same place. They hop around. So I'm hitting them at the late stage of when they're on that light. So they move just before I hit them. Hang on. Let's try this one. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi. What's up?
Okay. I have a problem with my, for some reason, my caller ID is at my house is acting kind of strange. Like it's changed its name to Notify MD. It well, when at the actual like words when they come out, it's been acting like that for a couple of.
It says Notify weeks. MD.
Yeah, like it spells it correctly even, and there's like a period after M and a period after D.
Now this shows up on your caller ID for an incoming call.
Yeah, for anything from my. Number, and it's really weird. I was wondering if it's like a prank or something.
Well, are they legitimate phone calls? Are you getting calls from real people?
Yeah, it's like my number. When I call myself from like a different number,
uh-huh.
from that specific number, it always gets, it's always that number. It always comes out as Modify MD.
Okay, I'm wondering if your caller ID device might be doing something wacky. What kind of caller ID device do you actually have?
I'm not sure. It's something with Optimum Voice.
Okay. You might want to first of all call them and ask them if they're familiar with that phrase. And failing that, get another caller ID device, whether it be a phone or just a standalone device or even a computer that records this information, and see if that phrase shows up as well. As far as changing caller ID information, that's generally done on a call-by-call basis, and there's no way somebody could change it if you were making the phone call.
Yeah. Emmanuel?
Yes, go ahead, Bernie.
Even less expensive than getting another caller ID unit and testing that is to take her caller ID unit and move it to another phone line, like at a friend's or relative's house or somewhere else in your building, and make a call to it then and see if it still says that. If it doesn't, then there's something wrong with the caller ID data on your phone line, and you need to talk to Verizon or whoever your local exchange carrier is about that.
Okay.
All right. Is that helpful?
Yeah, that's it. Thanks.
All right. Let us know what happens. 212-209-2900 is our phone number.
Sounds to me like it's trying to tell her to call a doctor.
Well, no, obviously, but if the caller doesn't want to call a doctor, they shouldn't be forced to. Oh. The question is why? What? I don't understand any caller ID device that would do that, but I'm sure our listeners have heard something about this, so if you have an answer, write to us.
Maybe it's broken and it needs some help.
Yeah, maybe a doctor for the caller ID device. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes. I wanted to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. It's a telephone question, kind of. I had a number that the same number used to belong to a construction company years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I suddenly got a bill that was meant for them on my bill.
Okay.
And I called Verizon, and Verizon says that if the FCC made a law that says that if somebody decides to pass this along to your number, They have to pass it along to you. And the weird thing is that that's not my name. It's a construction company name, so I figured they would check the information against whose name is on the bill and the account number, because we would have different names and account numbers.
Wait, you're saying that they used to have your phone number?
Yes.
All right, and there's a period of time where they disconnected their number and then you connected. There's usually a gap between phone numbers before different people use the same number.
Right.
So somehow, are you getting billed for things that they're doing now or things that they did in the past?
They had some kind of a directory listing.
Okay.
On, I forget the name of the company because I can't make it across the room right now, but... it was a directory listing. And the weird thing is people are still calling me and asking for that company.
Okay, so it's still...
So they're still listed.
Yeah, okay, you have to pay for... Is that the only thing you're paying for is the listing?
Well, the thing is that I disputed that. I called up because they said it was for... You know, the name of the company was Wright Construction Company.
Right, right.
And that's not my name. So, like I said, I asked them, do they check for the account numbers and the names? And they said no. They just
I have
passed
an answer.
The cost along.
Yeah, Bernie, go ahead.
I think that the directory listing business office has a whole separate billing system than the Verizon telephone number telephone services billing office. Are you talking to the Verizon that handles your phone bill, or are you talking to the Verizon business office that handles what is it, a Yellow Page ad or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, talk to the Yellow Pages people at Verizon, because it's their billing system. It's their screw up.
Yeah, but why should he have to do that? Why can't his local business office help him?
Because they're clueless.
Well, yeah, but they're also the ones sending him the bill, and he should.
No,
have
they're
to...
not.
No, they're not.
Wait, is this coming on your just coming on your regular bill or a different bill?
It's coming on my regular bill.
All right then. So the people,
so they are sending
the people who are sending that bill, they're the ones that are accountable. You tell them that you got the wrong listing in there, you bozos. You have to fix it.
The Yellow Pages people are sending the information to the Verizon business office for the telephone because, gee, it's more convenient to get one bill. It's also more difficult to correct it when it screws up.
Yeah, but it's their problem to fix it. He has to contact the people that send him the bill.
The point is, morally and legally, there's no way that this customer should be responsible for a listing that A, isn't his, and B, doesn't belong to that phone.
Yeah, and be insistent about this. Make sure that they credit you for all the months you've been paying for this.
Well, the 'cause I don't even know. How long? This just happened, and I had to go backtrack a little.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, I said that I have a different name and a different account number. So didn't you check that information instead of just passing it along? And they said, no, it just got passed along as per the number.
Well,
that's a little weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's who can say how they actually managed to screw this up? But
I actually did talk to the listing company,
mm-hmm.
and they said they were going to take it off, but it hasn't come off yet.
All right, well, you just got to keep on them and make sure that they do this, and say Public Service Commission if they fail to, and then call the Public Service Commission and say, this is outrageous, what they're doing is simply illegal, wrong, and causing you all kinds of anxiety and grief. Let us know how it turns out. Thanks for your call. We're out of time. We had a lot of people ask what this was when we played it last week.
I'm negative, but then I'm positive.
It's Evolution Control Committee. With a little bit of remixing. And hopefully nothing that'll cause copyright issues. But then again, everything does these days.
No.
We'll be back again next week. Same time, same place. See you then.
Yes.
Yes.
It's okay to say no.
Say no.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
It's okay to say no.
No.
Yes.
Learn how to say no.
No.
Loud and clear.
Yes.
I want y'all to check this out. Yo, now you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? And you'll know what time it is. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Check this out, though. You know what I'm saying?
No.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
No.
See? Because you can't, you understand what I'm saying? And it's good. You know what I'm saying?
No.
And you know what I'm saying? Yo, man, not only that, but yo, you know what I'm saying? And you'll know what time. time in the on. Listen.
Some say I'm negative, but then I'm positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I'm positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I'm positive. Some say I'm negative.
No. Negative. No.
Some say I'm negative, but then I'm positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I'm positive. Some say I'm negative, but then I'm positive. Some say I'm
no.
No.
But then I'm
yes. Yes.
Yes.
Say no.
Yes.
Yes.
Say no. And run home to tell your mom or dad.
Yes.
It's okay to say no.
No.
I got you.
No.
Yes.
Say no. One. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
It's okay to say no.
No. No.
I got you.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Learn how to say no loud and clear.
No.
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 No smoking. Here, smoking is absolutely prohibited. If you try again, it's always handcuffs for you.
Yes. Hey, that was some P.E. in there. Hey, this is WBAI New York 99.5 FM, by the way.